This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear about the Green Dot program being used at Kalamazoo College. It's designed to reduce sexual assaults and other forms of violence. But first, the legal documents are in place that create the City of Kalamazoo's Foundation for Excellence. The Articles of Incorporation were signed August 25th, 4 days after the Kalamazoo City Commission approved forming the foundation. It's been described as a laboratory in combining philanthropy and municipal finance. Steve Brown is the City of Kalamazoo's coordinator and resource specialist for the Foundation for Excellence. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Gordon.
So if we're looking at this process, which is obviously going to be a long-term thing, what does signing these legal documents mean in terms of how far along we are with the Foundation for Excellence?
Well, it's really the point where we can turn toward engaging a board of directors, which we'll start doing this fall. We currently have two board of directors, which are the mayor, Bobby J. Hopewell, and the city manager, James Ritzma. And we can also kind of elaborate the processes that go into selecting projects for funding that operate with the city and in partnership with the city in fiscal year 18 and moving forward. So we've had this long history since last year of advancing the projects through the city commission, of having a really extensive public comment. We this summer had the Imagine Kalamazoo 2025 strategic vision and master plans approved, which are themselves sort of the framework and the marching orders for what the foundation is primarily going to do. Approved, which means that we can really get down to the nitty-gritty and do the work that we're tasked to do. So it's exciting. It was a big night and a big day following when they signed the papers for all of us.
So as you noted, the mayor and the city manager are two of the members of the board for the Foundation for Excellence. What do we know right now about who else will be on that board in terms of, you know, what the makeup is, where do they come from, city residents, et cetera?
Absolutely. So we know the numbers and the structure. There's going to be 15 board members in total, and that's as per the bylaws and articles of incorporation. 9 of those need to be residents of the city of Kalamazoo. The other, what would that be?
Six
don't necessarily need to be city residents, although they can be. There's 8 groups that need to be represented on the board. So those include healthcare, the arts, education, et cetera, business. And then there'll be an at-large city commission member in addition to the mayor and city manager. And so the process for example, electing that at-large board member from the city commission is being determined right now, working with the city clerk and the city attorney to see what's consistent with what has been done in the past to elect city commissioners in special elections or for subcommittees, and what is also very efficient. You know, we don't want to get layer and layer of bureaucracy on top of the board from the get-go. The other members are as yet to be selected. We're working with community stakeholders to try and find the best way to establish those groups that will then be able to come up with a sort of a quorum from voices in the community about who should be represented on the board in those areas of arts and education and business. So we think this fall we'll have a lot more to share on that, and we'll be able to sort of put out the call to the community for people to advance their names or even just express interest to a local organization that's in one of those stakeholder groups.
Do you know yet who will make a decision in terms of who those board members are? Is that process in place yet?
It is. There's discussion with community organizations that can act as that stage in the process. So what will happen is these stakeholder groups, for example, let's say business, we'll find a really towering group in the community that's recognized as an established organization in the business community that can convene a meeting, can convene a number of names and voices and nominations for board members. They'll then go through those and they'll come up with a smaller vetted number of names. Those will pass to a nonprofit community organization, and we're in talks right now with a community foundation. That's no secret at all, the Kalamazoo Community Foundation. And then what they would do is they would select down to one person from each of those groups. So they'd go through their background, they'd go through their conflicts of interest, et cetera, and they'd come up with then a select group of people that they would advance to the city commission that the city commission could then vote on. And they could take them, as I understand it, either as one whole group or they could maybe select people in and out. But at this point, that's where we're at. So it's in the interest of checks and balances. So we've got voices from every level of the community from the very beginning trying to advance people who can then, you know, through these different election cycles, put, you know, interested, capable, excellent people on the board to help shape how the money's going to be spent, shape what the policies are, shape how the goals are aligned with the city and with the public's interest. So there's a lot of layers to it, but it's in the interest of transparency, of checks and balances, and of getting it right each time.
So once this board is in place, mm-hmm. The money, assuming it's going to get raised, is raised. We'll get to how that's going to happen in a little bit. Does that mean then, is this board going to have the final say over how that money gets spent, what projects it will go to, et cetera?
So the City Commission, as the elected body, has the final say on how all dollars are spent for our municipal government. So the City Commission is always the last word. How it's structured is that there will be initial meetings in the winter of each year, so that could be before or after the first of each year, that will help align city staff and the goals that our projects need to achieve, which then come from the Imagine Kalamazoo process. We'll align those two things, and we'll give sort of a preview to the City Commission and then to the board so that they can give comment, feedback, they can sort of push on one idea, pull on another idea. Then what staff will do over the first half of the year is come up with the tactics and basically the programs and projects, whether they're capital or operational, that fulfill those. So if we're talking about serving all youth equitably with summer programming in a way that advances their education and maintains their education all summer. So that would be the sort of top level goal. What we can do is then make sure that the programs that Parks and Rec or KDPS or other institutions are doing fulfill that. And so come fall, when the city's budget is being put together, the Foundation for Excellence item or sort of group of programs and projects would be brought back to the board for approval. And then with their approval, it would then advance to the City Commission that would approve all of the spending. So they are the absolute last word.
What can people expect once the campaign truly gets underway to raise $500 million?
Yeah, that's in the works. It's our understanding from the main donors and their co-chairs for the campaign that they'll take the lead. And so I think a substantial amount of money will come from the co-chairs themselves.
And this is Bill Johnston.
Bill Johnston and Bill Parfette, as well as their network. So however that gets, looked at is I think to be decided. The city is there in a support role, which means that we'll provide really any assets, printed, video, human resource assets that can help them achieve that goal, and we'll do everything we can to help them achieve the goal. So that could also include, site tours for potential donors, people who want to see what's it actually look like in Kalamazoo for jobs, for youth, for families, for public safety, for parks, for arts. We'll absolutely align, convene groups so that people can really see where their money would go and where it's needed as well. So we're there as a champion and in a powerful support role for that campaign. But what people shouldn't expect is that we'll be competing with existing foundations. We're really sensitive to the existing array of very successful nonprofits and foundations in the community. And we shouldn't expect that you'll see, flashy television commercials anytime soon for the Foundation for Excellence. So,
is this an experiment in some ways that you have a local government which, like many local governments in the state of Michigan right now, looks at its finances every year and says, things are getting tighter. We've had to let people go. We don't have as many people working for the city as we once did. And so now the idea is to maybe find another source of funding. Is that something that is happening in other places? And can the city of Kalamazoo look there and say, if we do it like this, it will probably turn out okay?
It absolutely is an experiment, and in the best possible sense of the word. So it began with the Blue Ribbon Revenue Panel in 2015 under then new city manager Jim Ritzma. And the goal there was to say, we're going to look this problem right in the face, and we have a structural budget deficit, which is A, partially due to shortfalls in local revenue, but two, also in large part due to the broken municipal finance system, which means that the revenue sharing from the state isn't reaching cities and hasn't for quite a long time, and in the foreseeable future probably won't reach the cities. So how do we address that? And how do we also make ourselves more competitive, right? Our tax rates were higher than our adjacent communities and higher than sort of the bars and metrics for the state level to make us competitive for people to locate here and for businesses to locate here. So what came out of that was an unattractive solution or potential solution, which was a kind of a tax, you know, whether it be property or income in the city of Kalamazoo. And that was deemed to really just be, you know, it would be negative for people and it'd be negative politically for the powers that be. So the solution that was come up with was this entire idea of donating money to a foundation that would support the city. And so in that sense, it is absolutely an experiment. It hasn't really, in this sense, been tried before. There are funds in New York and LA that are still being funded and built that sort of support the cities. But this is intertwined with the city's finances in the sense that it's patching the budget deficit, which is about $3.8 million per year. And it's allowing for lowering the mills from 19.2705 to 12. So very boring numbers, but that means that if you own a house or property in the city of Kalamazoo, you received a letter this summer saying, here's your lower property taxes. And that's great news for everybody. It'll be at that same rate next year. So that means that your property taxes are now lowered in this, you know, as far as the city's tax rate is concerned. There are, of course, other taxes that apply to properties. But so it's an experiment in that regard. And I think that's what's exciting about it is we get to look at organizations all across the country and we get to say, so you're a foundation in Detroit, you're a foundation in Baltimore, you're a foundation in Philadelphia. What is your goal and how have you achieved that over the years and how can we learn from you? So when we talk about this potentially being a model, that's not even in our thinking right now. We're just saying the first step to success in anything is you ask the right questions and you humbly approach the challenges at hand. So we're saying, how can we do the work well? How can we invent this process and this workflow and these relationships within the city, some of them existing, some of them new, so that they really, you know, not only work well, but work well in the long term. If that works, and we really, really hope that it does, and we think we've got the right talent and the right people and the right resources to make it work, it'd be fantastic if we started getting calls from different cities to say, you know, how did this work? Is this something that would be right for us? To the broader question of what our cities nationally face, that's an enormous question. And I think, you know, the hope for any city is that the existing processes and systems that they have to fund the things that make their cities work and that help give them civilization at the local level, that those continue. I mean, nobody, I think, really wants to have to radically reinvent the funding model for a city. But this offers, you know, a chance to sort of see what this looks like and see how it works.
Steve Brown, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much, Gordon. Great to be here.
Steve Brown is the City of Kalamazoo's coordinator and resource specialist for the Foundation for Excellence. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. What can colleges and universities do to reduce sexual assault and other forms of violence on campus? Kalamazoo College is offering training designed to decrease dating violence, stalking, and sexual assault. Jessica Sonnenberg-Ward is assistant registrar at Kalamazoo College, and she is here to tell us about Green Dot Training at K College and elsewhere. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gordon.
What exactly is Green Dot? How does it work?
Yeah, so Green Dot is established to respond to a problem that exists within our community. So we know that power-based personal violence, and when I say that, I mean relationship violence, stalking, and sexual assault. We know that no matter the number of power-based personal violence happening, the rate is too high. So there are a lot of different data points out there that talk about how much violence is happening in the community. So some of those common ones are 1 in 4 women who are college age are victims of sexual assault. And we know that those rates are higher for transgendered individuals. And what we seek to do with Green Dot is to look at those numbers, that problem of so many people being harmed, and figure out a way to prevent it. So in a lot of trainings regarding sexual violence prevention, it focuses on teaching men not to rape and teaching women not to get raped. And so Green Dot kind of flips the switch on that and says, well, there are all these other people that are in the community that are watching signs of power-based personal violence happening. So what can we do to influence those people to step in when they notice things happening? So Green Dot focuses on that problem and teaches people specific skills to respond to violence.
Is there significance to the color green?
Yes, there is. So imagine a map, let's say for this instance, Kalamazoo. So anytime there is an instance of violence occurring in the community, it puts a red dot on the map. So this could be a partner hitting their partner in the parking lot of Meijer. It could be someone at a local bar continuously hitting on another person, even though they are not responding to them. And it could be a number of other instances of violence that's occurring. And so all of those instances are those red dots on the map. And what Green Dot teaches is that there are little interventions that you can do to prevent those violent activities from happening. So, for instance, in that parking lot at Meijer, you could go into the security guard and say, I noticed this happening. Could you go out and approach the situation for me? That would be a green dot. You've noticed something bad happening, and you've done something to put a green dot on the map to potentially prevent that harm from happening, stopping that harm in the moment.
So when you talk about going into the security guard, that one example that you're giving there, the person who is intervening is not doing so directly, is not doing so in such a way that they might end up in a physical altercation themselves. Is part of the training here that you can intervene and do it in a way which is safe for yourself as well?
Exactly. So part of what Green Dot teaches is how to intervene in situations being aware of your barriers that exist. So when I say barriers, I mean there are things that can prevent you from intervening into things. They can be physical barriers like your size or maybe your gender appearance. And it could be something like a personality trait, like being shy or introverted. And it could also be something like a cultural barrier, like you would not ever call the police for something for help, or you would think, oh, that's not my business. And so what Green Dot is really great at is knowing that there are barriers that exist for all people, and it teaches you how to understand your barriers and then figure out the different ways that you can intervene that work for you. So there are three different intervention styles that Green Dot talks about. That is being direct, delegating, and distracting, so that you can intervene in situations. So being direct would be like going up to the person that's causing harm and saying something, or saying something directly to the person that's experiencing the harm. Delegating would be checking in with the people around you, asking if they see what you see. But also, it could be calling the police or calling campus security if you're on a college campus. And then distracting is pretty interesting, I think, because it completely ignores what's happening, and you just basically create a diversion. So maybe you honk your horn in that parking lot of Meijer, or, you know, do something else that is distracting in that situation.
Rattle cans.
Right? There, right. I mean, if you have some cans, I guess.
So how extensive is the training? How long does it take?
Yeah, so the training for students is a 6-hour training. And the reason that it's so in-depth is because it takes a long time to have people practice intervening. It can be really nerve-wracking to step up in instances where harm is happening, because we do have to protect ourselves and we have to find ways that we can keep ourselves safe. So there is a 6-hour training for students, but then we also offer overview trainings that are about an hour long.
Is there also a recognition part of this, that perhaps people have in the past walked past something and not connected the dots right away, that is a sign of trouble, that is a situation which does represent violence within a relationship?
I think that is so spot on. So there are many times where we see something that we've not noticed that it was a problem until we've actually seen it happen. And I think that what's really great about Green Dot is it's not about being successful with every intervention that you do. It's just understanding that when you can do something, right? And I think a lot of times as humans, we want to be successful in everything that we do, but sometimes you may not acknowledge, like you said, that violence is happening. And that's part of what is really great about the training too, is it talks about the different types of violence that happens that can lead up to some of the more major violence. So like stalking, it can talk about, we have norms in our culture where you Facebook stalk someone because you just want to get to know them and you're really interested. But there is a point, right, where that crosses a line. And I think we both can relate that if you're obsessively checking somebody's Facebook every day to see what they're up to, that's beginning to start signs of stalking. And so I think that's what's really great about the program, is it talks about how there are some shades of gray, essentially, when it comes to violence, and it can be difficult to know when to intervene.
And some of the things that you have mentioned are not necessarily physical violence.
No, not at all.
You know, stalking, assuming it's stays at a certain level, is not necessarily physical violence,
right,
but it is troubling.
Yeah, because it can be really intimidating to have somebody either continuously texting, calling, Facebook messaging you, for instance, following you around your campus to every class that you're going to, maybe showing up at your house all the time. That can be really intimidating. And so we need to recognize that those are unacceptable behaviors and figure out ways that we can intervene and call out that person that we see what they're doing.
What do we know about the track record of Green Dot in terms of the colleges and universities and maybe even other institutions where it's been implemented?
Yeah, so Green Dot is a really great program that's been acknowledged and had a lot of research done about it. It can reduce the amount of violence that's happening in the community. For instance, Anchorage, Alaska adopted the program, and they were the city, not like a college or anything like that. The city adopted it, and they were able to reduce violence by a significant amount. I don't have the exact number, but I think it was like 50% or something really astronomical. And so what the data suggests is when you implement the strategy and you continuously work on teaching people these skills, it is able to reduce the rates of violence that's happening on your campus.
So how many students are you hoping to have trained by the time you get through this next session?
Yeah, so we have 4 trainings planned for the next year, and we are hoping to get about 20% of the population. So that would be around like 150 to 200 students we're hoping for. And after that, we'll start doing a little bit of some shorter trainings for students. But yeah, that's what we're hoping for.
So this is particularly for the Kalamazoo College campus. But you mentioned that Anchorage, Alaska did this actually for the city of Anchorage. So if someone out there hears this and says, hey, this sounds kind of interesting, but I don't go to Kalamazoo College and I don't work at Kalamazoo College, mm-hmm. You know, what are some things that people in the community might do if they think that Green Dot sounds like something which they think is going to be better for the community?
Yeah. Well, we would love this to be something that could blow up in our own community. And so we would love if people are interested in the strategy and interested in implementing it to get in contact with us. Green Dot does have a specific community intervention program, which looks different than a college campus intervention program. What's really great about Green Dot is they come in and they set you up to be successful for your constituent group. So they give us basically 2 manuals to be able to implement this into our community. And so I would say that it'd be really important to get in contact with Green Dot to be able to get some people trained in the strategy. And then we could work together to see, I mean, I would love to see this be something that the whole community can adopt and start to learn about.
You were at another school where Green Dot was implemented, correct?
Yes. So I worked at the University of Puget Sound in Tacoma, Washington, and they had implemented the program there, and it was just a part of the culture by the time I got there. So the orientation leaders would talk about it and do not skits, but they would do readings about it. And they were some of the campus influencers. So it was really impactful. And it was just language that the community knew. So people knew to step up when things were happening. They knew to look out for each other. And they knew to say things to prevent the violence that was happening in the community. It was wonderful.
Jessica, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Jessica Sonnenberg-Ward is Assistant Registrar at Kalamazoo College. Links with more information about Green Dot training can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.